Great to see you guys. Kurt Z, alcoholic. Oh, how are we going to start this tonight? So the reading, Allie asked me for a reading. And, you know, I always like that. I think the last time I talked about something in regards to 11, we were talking about the big book, but I like this part in the book. I'm going to read it. Calvin read it. There's a direct linkage among self-examination. I would switch that and say examination of this condition of self. Meditation and prayer, taken separately, these practices can bring much relief and benefit. But when they are logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. And here's the part that we didn't get in there. Now and then, we may be granted a glimpse of that ultimate reality, which is God's kingdom. And will we be comforted and assured that our destiny in that realm will be secure so long as we try, however faultingly, to find and do the will of our own creator. I think the comfort and assuredness comes from the glimpse. That's what I think. And I think that because that's my experience. So when they say an ultimate glimpse of this reality, I'm talking about for me experientially. I'm talking about the experience of grace. I'm talking about the experience of forgiveness, not being forgiven, forgiveness. I'm talking about a clarity of unconditional love. I'm talking about the position of neutrality, safe and protected. I'm talking about all these things, these words we throw in that direction to point to that experience, right? Sorry. Some people would say this is a gradual experience. Some people would say this is a very sudden revelatory experience. Whatever it is, or however you experience it, the beauty is that it shifts the perception of reality within us, right? So when they were talking about prayer and meditation, one of the first things I learned about prayer was this. It was a guy named Bill Bird, and Bill Bird was a native elder that used to do the sweat lodges in a treatment center that I was sent to when I drank it 19 years. So I'm not a success around here. I'm a successful failure. And Bill Bird said something to me, and it stuck ever since. He said, "Listen, you don't ask for something from the Creator until you acknowledge what you've been given." So because when you do, you create an imbalance, and we want things are in harmony. So he said, so before you pray, you acknowledge what you've been given. So how would I do that? I would say, thank you. You know, I love Meister Eckhart says, if the only prayer we ever said was thank you, it'd be sufficient. Right? It's like, so a lot's been going on today. In fact, there's been a lot of talking and listening, and some of the people that were in the meetings earlier. My first conversation was with somebody who had a friend who went out with 32 years. The second conversation was a conversation that went out with 27 years. What happened? You know? And my conversation with this was, that's not puzzling to me. It's not puzzling to me because I drank it 19 years. And I understood what happened to me. So it's very obvious what happened to them. I think the condition's the same. And so I'd start with this. When we talk about 11, I'm talking about it from the perspective of going through the steps up to that point. I'm not talking about jumping in 11 without any experience in the first 10 steps. That's where I'm coming from. So I would say Let's just take one passage where it says, we constructively review our day. That was an impossibility for me in the first 19 years. I destructively reviewed my day. I always looked where I screwed up, where I made a mess, where, you know, it was never a positive thing because I was always looking at it through the condition that I suffered from that I didn't know I suffered from, which was the bondage of self. So I always tore things down. I couldn't build upon my mistakes through corrective measures. I didn't understand that's how it worked. I thought it was just linear rather than, you know, some people would say two steps forward, one step back, three steps forward, one step back. Like this is the God rides straight with crooked lines kind of aspect of it, you know. No mud, no lotus, right? It's like I wanted all the flowers. I didn't want any of the mud, you know. So how I'd start with this is it says in the previous step, it says something like continue to watch. And there was no conscious awareness. I did not have access to the ability to watch. I was listening the whole time, which is very different. Because I was listening from the condition because I thought I was the condition. What I mean by that is the condition of self. I thought this belief system narrative that was going on in my head that had a story that had past experiences that produced guilt, remorse, shame, morbid reflection. I thought that was me. I didn't understand what the big book said when it said, being convinced that self, singular, was what defeated us, plural. It was one condition manifesting through a bunch of different people in a bunch of different ways. And I thought that was me. And what I found out was through being surrendered was it wasn't. It was the condition I was suffering from. I mean, I said this in another meeting. Why would I ask the Creator to relieve me of the bondage of self if I could not be relieved of the bondage of self? Why would I do that? Why would there be a prayer written? The problem was I was so identified with this condition, I couldn't be free from it because I was identified as the condition. And when I saw that I wasn't the condition, the possibility to be free from it became available. It's kind of like the door opened. Koya said to me one time, he said, listen, it's like this. You can stand in a hallway. He said, you're going to be standing there and you're not going to see any doors. And he said, all of a sudden, the door is going to appear. And that door, when it appears, nobody can see that door but you. And you got to walk down the hallway and go through that door. And when he said that to me, I thought, what the hell is he talking about? You know, I just don't get it, you know. But then later, it's like I got the information first. Then I got the ability to understand the information later. Right? It was kind of like the prayer, St. Francis prayer. You know, it says, I was reading this, he says, as the author, man of several hundred years been related to saint. We won't be biased or scared off by the fact because though he wasn't alcoholic, he did like sometimes go through the emotional ringer. And as he came out the other side of that painful experience, this prayer was his expression. He didn't write the prayer as a skillful means to achieve something. He wrote the prayer, Lord, make me an instrument of this peace. The experience of, let's just say, grace or this waking up, the prayer came out of that. It came out of that clarity, that lucidity, that revelatory experience that he had. And I think that's what's so funny about us with 10, 11, like it's almost a bookmark, right? It's like, so we're trying to, we entered the world of the spirit. Oh, we did? Well, what does that look like? Well, read the promises. Very descriptive of what it looks like to be in the world of the spirit. Not that we were out of the world of the spirit, but I wasn't consciously aware. Somebody read that earlier. It's always been here. I haven't. That was the point. The point was, I haven't been here. I've been in my head. I've been in an inner critic, a narrative. I didn't have the ability to see beyond the veil of my thinking. I mean, it said it. It's, I don't know how many times I read it and never saw it. It said it in We Agnostics. It said, without knowing it, you've been brought here by a certain kind of faith. What's the faith that I was brought here with? My dependence upon my thought process, my thinking, my reality that was constructed up here. I had no idea faith had been involved all along, just like they said. It was just in something other than what's relied on today. You know, a lot of times I'll come into these meetings, I'll say, listen, I say this, and I say this with as much sincerity as I can say it. Thank God I'm not suffering from what's not happening anymore. Thank God. And when that little voice shows up every once in a while, it's so clear to me what that is. And I can hear it in every one of you because I know we all got the same condition. It just manifests a different way. I used to think I identified with you at the podium. And on a deep spiritual level, I totally do. But what I identify mostly when I first came to AA was the condition that was driving you. And when you shared it from the podium, I related to it. So it wasn't me or you, it was the condition that was driving us. And I think what 10 and 11, you know, this is about, like, I had a lot of information about, I had a lot of self-knowledge, let's put it that way. But there wasn't an integration of these principles in my life. It wasn't a way of living. You know, I think I shared this once before, a friend of mine who, he struggled with his program for almost 30 years. He's still not sober, in and out, in and out. But man, out of the mouths of babes, right? He said, it's really funny. He said, when I fit my life into AA, it seems to work. He said, but when I fit AA into my life, it never works. And I thought, boy, is that dead on the money, right? Dead on the money. So, you know, I didn't want to like get into the quote and the stuff, a lot of stuff out of the book, because I'll read a little bit in here. It says, suggest prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it. It works if we have the proper attitude. So I just say, I was pointing to page 55 for that proper attitude. Sweep away prejudice, think honestly, search diligently. When we retire, we constructively review our day. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. Right? So they have some questions, just reflections. We're resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid. Well, those are the conditions of self. So basically it's saying, well, were you in self today? Have we kept some, you know, Coyce always says, you can't keep a secret. You know, oh, I was keeping secrets. No, you cannot keep a secret. It's an impossibility. It will manifest. It will show up. Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Were we thinking what we could do for others and what we could pack into the stream of life? I've talked about this before. It just baffled me. Where did he get Bill was like, he was stealing stuff from every book. You know, William James, he was stealing stuff from, you know, he wrote stuff. But Stream of Life really caught my attention one time, and I thought, where the hell did he get that passage? You know? And then I looked it up. I looked at the Stepping Stones, and I went on Stepping Stones to see what books he had on the shelf. And unbeknownst to me, there was a book by Rabindranath Tagore, and he wrote a poem called The Stream of Life. It's a beautiful poem. And I thought, you know what? I bet he stole that from him. Now, I don't know if he did or not. We're thinking what we could do, what we could pack into the stream of life. You want to know what the stream of life is? It gives you some kind of beginning just to read that poem. But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. That's the condition of self. That's not me. That's the condition I suffer from. Until I was relieved of that condition. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness. It does not say we ask God to forgive us. That's not what it says. That's not what I'm reading. And I know what God's forgiveness is because I experienced it when I got surrendered and got released from the obsession to drink. I experienced a sense of ease, a sense of comfort, a sense of peace, an unconditional love. It was a very revelatory experience. So when they are asking that, I have a sense what they're saying is, see, where the corrective measures need to come from, Kurt, isn't your head, but what you think you should do. They're coming from this position of neutrality where you're open to receive something. And sometimes that's totally off kilter and out of the blue. It's very hard to talk about this. Because it's something that we practice, we do. Intuitive thought, Upon awakening, let's think about the 24-hour, we consider our plans for the day. Well, this is, I got this blown out of the water because I was like, I had a list of 20 things I was going to do. And Quaz asked me, what do you think that means? And I said, I got a list here. And he said, that's not what it means. I said, what do you mean that's not what it means? It says, what you're going to do is, it's like this. We consider our plans before we begin. We ask God to direct our thinking, especially be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motive. So over the years, sitting at the beach, what that means to me is I'm asking God to direct my thinking, divorce it from self-pity, which is the past. Dishonest means I'm not seeing with clarity in the present moment. I'm seeing through a lens, an ego lens, or a lens of self. And self-seeking is the future. So what I'm really asking for is I'm asking to be present. I'm asking to be here. Now, I can't be anywhere else, but I can be consciously aware that I'm here. And when I'm consciously aware that I'm here, the statement in the book that says your thought life will be placed on a higher plane becomes accessible. It's not a belief system. It's a fact. It's the present state of awareness. So when it said we consider our plans for the day, my plans weren't something I was going to do. The way it was explained to me was, it's how I'm going to be based on the corrective measures that I've gotten from intuitive thought, from that exercise of reflection the night before. And the right things to do will come out of the way that manifests. I kind of had the cart before the horse. So if I'm, and I use this a lot because this is one of my defects, sometimes I'll get very dismissive. And I'll go, wait a minute, you need to be more compassionate, open-minded. And then the actions come out of that. So I get impatient sometimes. I get excited. You know, they warn you about excitement. I get excited sometimes. I mean, how many of us here, you know, like, how can you not get excited? I'm consciously aware of the fact my life's been saved more than once. I'm consciously aware of the fact that I'm not drunk in the juniper bushes. Because they don't like to let you up when you're drinking vodka. They just will not let you up. And it's a present state. It's a present state of awareness. That sense of gratitude comes out of that kind of clarity, I think. And I want to cultivate that. And I want to grow in effectiveness and understanding of that. And it seems like most of us want that. It just seems that way to me. It just seems that we're looking for, well, I didn't know what I was looking for. This was the conversation we had in a meeting just before. You know, unsuspected inner resource. I came in here with a belief system. And that's just a thought. It was a great starting place, but I couldn't rest there. I needed direct experience with it. And Bill articulated that in the book in a magic way. Winchester Cathedral, his grandfather's good-natured contempt for the church folk and how they must listen, that the spheres really had their music. I mean, that's like he's pointing to something, right? Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. Like, my head's not out to get me. Like, that's not what's going on. The condition of self? Maybe. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. You know, and I don't mean right or wrong. I mean just out of balance, right? In thinking about it, we may face indecision. Well, the first time I was given this exercise, I was like, it was hilarious, I think. He said, every time you faced indecision or doubt, I want you to pause. And I'm like, well, that sounds, you know, the head gets old, like, oh, that's easy, I can do that. And then a week later, I called him and said, I failed totally, you know, at the exercise you gave me. And he said, what are you talking about? I said, well, you said whenever there's indecision or doubt, I had to pause. I said, I didn't get a damn thing done all week. You know, I looked at it as failure, success, right? He said, hey, dummy, that wasn't the point. The point was to see how much you drift into self and you're totally unconscious that you're drifting into this condition. And he gave me an analogy of a street. And he said, you know, when you're in the street, he said, the curbs are there for a reason. And when you bump a curb, agitation, or another curb, doubt, there's a corrective measure that needs to be taken. You pause, you get this corrective measure, and you make an adjustment. And this is how it works. Not how we work it, it's how it works. And then he told me a story about him and Johnny Looking Cloud, which really, really kind of solidified the experience he was trying to convey. And it had to do with, he went to see an elder who was sober a while, and he was working with Johnny Looking Cloud. He went up there, and Johnny Looking Cloud took him outside the house, and he said, look, I want you to stand here. And he went in front of him, and he drew a line in the sand. He said, I want you to walk on this line. And so Koya started walking on the line, and Johnny Looking Cloud came up to the side of him and pushed him off the line. And he got really agitated. And he said, get back on the line. So he gets back on the line. He walks a little further. He pushes him the other way off the line. And Koya said he got really agitated. He did this 5 or 6 times. As he gets to the end of the line, he said, turn around. Now look at the line. And Don said he looked at the line and he said, see, you think this path is that line. It's not. The path is the off track, on track, off track, on track, off track, on track. That's the path. And I got it. Oh, constructively review your day. This is how you constructively review. You build upon your mistakes through corrective measures. And it clicked. And there wasn't the discourse of guilt or shame or remorse or self-pity or morbid reflection anymore, because there was a different insight into looking at it. And so it was like, as a friend of mine says, it was a much traveling lighter. It wasn't an intense, myopic view of this condition that I thought I was, right? It says, and thinking about our day may face, and we may not be able to determine which course, that we ask for inspiration into a thought or decision. We relax, we take it easy. Well, I didn't know how to relax when I was driven by the narrative in my head. I could not relax. The voice, you know, they say the cries of 1,000 monkeys jumping from branch to branch. I remember sitting at home when I could not get released from drinking. And praying, God, please let me go to sleep, please let me go to sleep, please let me go to sleep, please let me go to sleep. Because I wanted my head to shut up. Please let me go to sleep, please let me go to sleep. That was my prayer. That's the best I could do. My prayer today, one of my favorite prayer today is this. God, need a little help here. That's it. Need a little help here. I love that, you know. So we don't struggle. This is totally counterintuitive to us, right? I mean, Jesus. We're often surprised how the right answers come after we've tried this. That's exactly what happened. I was shocked. All of a sudden, uncommon sense becomes common sense, you know, like he said in his book, in his story. What used to be a hunch or occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. It's the way you see, not the way you think. Pay attention. Doesn't mean think more, it means pay attention. Conscious awareness. Somebody read Spiritual Experience. This awareness is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. This sixth sense, this ability to see beyond the veil of the five senses, this clarity that gives a new color spectrum to this color field, this ability to see behind the curtain, this ability to see everything's a manifestation of that will. It's all a divine expression, it's all sacred. It's like, that was totally inaccessible to me. So, I mean, I could kind of go on. It says, we conclude the period of meditation. Like, I'm like, whoop, did they say something about meditation? I must have missed it. I missed that part. Where did they say something about meditation? So, this is a very difficult topic to even speak on. I think all attempts to meditate take you away from the meditative state. I think you got to start there, but I think at some point, like who's really trying to meditate? That was me just trying to be in control of my condition. And when I couldn't sit quietly, I quit doing it. See, it was like, well, it's not working for me. Because I thought I knew what I was supposed to get. You know, it says, be quick to see where religious people are right, right? It doesn't say be quick to see that religious people, right? It says where. I want to read you something, just in respect. It's a short passage from this thing I didn't even know when I was trying to meditate. The mere act of trying to hold the mind to a single point, an act with which higher forms of meditation begin, teaches the beginner in a radically concrete experiential way that he or she has little or no control over the mental flow. All attentional training starts with this failure. I wish I'd had that information. This is the first great step in the work of objectifying the mental flow, that is, of seeing it not as something I am doing, but something that is simply happening. Without this realization, no progress can be made. That's my experience. For one must first know one is in prison in order to work intelligently to escape. See, I didn't know. Just like I didn't know that, you know, the failure of being able to quit drinking was the first great step in getting into AA. The failure of quitting drinking, my inability to stop was the whole, because it was all based on managing. I was just trying to control something that I had no control over, but I didn't know I was doing that. I didn't know I had a mind that was going to take me back to the booze, regardless of what I thought, felt, saw, didn't matter. It always took me back. That's powerlessness. I mean, I remember when I saw in 1986 that I was an alcoholic. I mean, and I saw that with, like, conceded to my innermost self, right? And I called some people. I said, you're not going to friggin' believe it. I'm an alcoholic. And they're like, dude, we've been watching you for 6 years. We've known that. You know, like, I was the last one to find out. But it was revelatory to me, because I didn't realize that I was just trying to manage and control the condition. And I was doing that by going to meetings, getting the steps right, crossing the T's, dotting the I's, getting everything in a very specific order, working with people. Now, I'm not saying any of those things are bad. I'm just saying those were what the big book was saying to me when it said, by every form of self-deception experimentation, you're going to prove yourself an exception to the rule. Therefore, in control. And when that hit, I was like, holy moly. And this was very stage specific. This didn't happen in the beginning. This happened after being here a while. I was just trying to, I was a victim of a delusion that I could wrest satisfaction if I managed it. And guess what? What I found out was it doesn't need to be managed. It is unmanageable. It is like Coya said, there are principles, laws, and values that are working in perfect harmony all the time. You're the one that's out of sync with them. You are, not them. The world of the spirit is not out of sync. And see, it was like I was getting different insight and information. I was getting a different, I don't know, just, it was landing. Let's just put it that way. So rather than, like a friend of ours says, rather than doing service, I was being of service. It was a natural effect of starting to wake up and starting to be a part of the world, starting to be connected. It wasn't like effort anymore, where it was like, ah, damn, I wish he wouldn't have called. I'm watching a movie, you know? It was like, oh, man, you know. It was like there was a transition in it. Ollie, how much time do I have? I'm getting pretty close. 5 minutes, good. So there's a thing that says, you know, and I really like this. It says we constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show. I don't know what just happened. I'm looking at some eye management.
Just unshare your screen, please. Yeah,
there you go. Oh, there you go. I like that. Eye management. That's a good topic for this. No. We constantly remind ourselves we're not running the show. Well, I constantly remind myself I was never running the show. See, it's not that I'm not running the show anymore. I was a victim of that delusion. And man, oh man, the manifestations that me and Mitchell were talking about this earlier have an immense effect on the lives of people I love. When you're walking around in the dark and you're bumping into people, and most of us have seen this going through amends, we see, oh my God, that ignorance can cause a lot of damage. And the beauty and the gift of this program is that damage can be healed. That's the beauty. It can be healed. A new relationship, not a revised old one, but a new relationship. We constantly remind ourselves, thy will be done. You know, I always say, thy will is being done. It's happening right now. It's not something that needs to happen in the future. It's happening right now. In these little boxes, at this moment, I'm present with you guys. And I'm immensely grateful that Ali asked me to come and do this. I really, really appreciate it, because you guys, you put up with me. You saved my life. And then these guys that carry the deep wisdom of Alcoholics Anonymous and the spiritual principles here, I thank God. I couldn't have picked them. I couldn't have picked these people in my life. I couldn't have picked all these people. I was brought here, and I get that. I was totally brought here. I was a seeker long before I started drinking. I knew when I was 12 years old, I remember hearing it from a podium. The guy said, listen, if a spaceship would have landed when I was 12, standing in my backyard, and told me they brought me here as a teeny baby, it would have explained more things to me than everything I knew up to that point. I heard a guy say that from the podium, and I thought, how did that guy get in my head? Because that guy said what I thought at 12 years old, standing in my backyard. I knew there was something more. I have always known there's something more. And when I found booze, I found a synthetic experience of that revelatory insight and connectedness. And vodka did that for me. Drugs did not do that for me. What drugs did for me, they kept me in a holding pattern up here. But when I drank booze, all right, we can do this. It gave me that synthetic experience of being connected. So I think we'll just leave it there, Ali. I think I just want to say thank you, and thanks for listening, you guys. Thanks for putting up with me.